So it's not easy to be in any position at this moment. So I'm sure that in the coming weeks, we will have a clearer situation, and everyone has to be a little bit patient, I think, in the first 2-3 weeks when everything will reopen, to see where we're heading, how, and how to make everyone happy.
Today on Dirty Linen, we are hanging out in Melbourne town. We are talking to Andrea Pagani, the chef at Figo, a very cute pizza bar in Elwood in Melbourne. Andrea, welcome to Dirty Linen.
Oh, thank you, Dani, and thank you to all the listeners.
Yeah, well, I'm sure everyone is going to enjoy what you've got to say. Tell us about Figo and what you try to offer there, at least when you're able to open.
So Figo, it's a sort of dialect term that it means cool in Italian. So we offer some down-to-earth, kind of laid-back, honest food. So we try to make everything at the venue, and we offer pasta, pizza, and gelato. And basically we are trying to offer the same kind of trattoria feeling, but up to date to the 2021 kind of style.
Yeah, nice. I mean, what I love, because, you know, I'm not far from there and I often walk past in the early evenings, maybe walking with the dog or whatever. And I love this sort of the real street side aperitivi kind of feel that you guys have going on. You know, sometimes families are there, or the parents might have a spritz, or, you know, the dad's got a beer, the kids have got, you know, a little pizza, and, you know, there's a bit of salumi around. It's just got a very welcoming kind of feel.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, you actually highlighted a nice aspect of Figo, one of those that I really, really love, which is, yeah, we have families with kids. Of course, pizza, you know, it's a family unifier, but we also have couples. I still have this very old couple that I really love, and they're probably in the late 80s or 80s or something, and they come for dinner, you know, holding their hands. And then when they leave, the husband goes to, you know, to get the car, and he comes back after around like 15, 20 minutes. But the wife is sitting there chatting with us while she waits for him. And then they say hello to all the staff. So, you know, it's like a good local. That's what we try to offer, to be good local. So we try to remember everyone's name. Sometimes they call us and they say, "Ah, I want my usual pizza." Which is not very easy because, I don't know, there's, for instance, 4 Carolines, and it's very hard to understand which Caroline is calling. So, yeah, sure, which is the one with, and, you know, I can let it repeat. But, yeah, you're right. Like, that's the kind of feel that we want, and we want, you know, that people can say informally hi or hello anytime they walk by.
Yeah, beautiful. And how long have you guys been there?
So we opened the first section on the 2nd of June 2016, and by coincidence, it's the Italian National Day, and it wasn't meant to be. It just happened that we got the legal license the day before. And we opened the second section because, as you said, it was conceived at the beginning to be a street food place. So there wasn't meant to be any pasta or main. But then people were asking, and the venue next door became available. So we decided to expand in 2017. Another coincidence, again on the 2nd of June. So, yeah, it sounds like very redundantly Italian, but, yeah, I can tell you that it's just a coincidence.
Love it. I mean, I think, you know, when I've sat in there enjoying the food and the hospitality, I've felt that it's such a good example of how rich Melbourne is in food experiences, because it's just a little modest neighbourhood place, but the quality is really there. The feeling is there. And, you know, as you've explained, you've got lots of loyal regulars, but you, and people that you really look after in the community. I think, yeah, it's a really nice place. I love it. But it, you know, when you talk about those beautiful people, the 80-year-old couple, that just makes me wonder, what are they doing now through these long periods when Figo hasn't been able to look after them in the normal way?
Yeah, true. Like, luckily, that specific guy still comes for takeaway. which is great. You know, it's the stereotype of the local customer who, you know, gives back, is not just looked after by us during opening times, but also looks after us in critical times. So that's what's happening. You know, like we can tell there's a lot of people are exhausted, but the good thing is that it's like our mission is, I love when people come in and they're grumpy. I love it because our mission is in 1 hour and a half, they need to get out, say hello, a goodbye to everyone and say, oh, thanks, the food was great. That's our goal. And, you know, in this kind of times, everything is so even more critical because we don't have 90 minutes. We have 90 seconds to do that. So, and we try to, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, you know, we're doing our best to let's get out of this as soon as, and in the best way we can.
And so how do you do that, Andrea, in 90 seconds? Like, tell me about, you know, your strategies for passing over some good feeling in that short period.
Oh, it's a secret. No, I'm joking. No, basically, so sometimes it works on its own because people just enjoy the, you know, the Italian theater. So we, you know, because in the kitchen, everyone is more or less Italian. Again, it's a coincidence because I don't really mind. I love having, you know, we're in Melbourne and it's fair to have, even though sometimes customers, they do complain and I get so crossed. I had one customer one time calling and complained that the person on the phone wasn't Italian. I said, well, what can I can't, you know, like, I don't know, it's counter discrimination on the other side. But anyway, so sometimes they enjoy the live performance of Italian. They always think that we're fighting because we are loud, but we're not. Or otherwise, we try, you know, to tell jokes, or sometimes we accidentally, you know, heard or misspelled the name. So sometimes a Robert comes and pick up the pizza, and on the docket it says Rupert. You know, so yeah, anyway, as long as it works, it makes them laugh. That's fine.
Love it. So tell us about this difficult period. You know, it's a year and a half now of in and out of lockdown, and some of these lockdowns have been very long. What's it been like for you guys? How have you navigated the pandemic?
Well, yeah. How many days do I have to answer this?
You got as long as you want.
So, but of course, the most obvious and blatant element is the lack of staff, because specifically for a pizzeria, but I'm sure it happens also for other specific cuisines, you know, Chinese, Japanese, Indians, any kind of cuisine. But getting staff that are very capable to do pizza is not easy at all. And because there hasn't been any turnover, and lots of guys left Melbourne to go to other COVID-free states, even within Australia. So we had to work very hard with trying, of course, to make everyone feeling comfortable, not just because of the COVID, but, you know, it's hard for everyone. And most of the people that work with us, they have no family here. So we needed not to be just an employer, but we needed to be the family as well, because it's, you know, very challenging in this time. So we try to keep the level as comfortable as we could for them. And, you know, we navigated pretty well, I have to say. I can't complain at all. The staff, it seems to me, unless something changes the last couple of hours, love to be with us. We love to have them on board. And yeah, it's been, that's of course the first big problem. The second problem, I would say that as weird as it sounds, when you reopen after all this period of being closed, it looks like, I don't know, if you break your leg and you start walking, the first day that you start walking, you actually fall on the floor straight away because you're not trained anymore. So the first two tables that walk in and, oh my God, I have to bring the menu and the drinks. How do I do this? You know, you kind of forgot everything. And so the first couple of days are very shocking because you have lots of people coming and you are not trained to do that, like, because you, for 2 or 3 months, you haven't done that.
It's, you know, I mean, I guess, at least as diners, I think they've also forgotten how to be outside of the house. So I suppose it's like, in a way, everybody has to relearn how to be together at the same time.
True. Well, yeah, especially in these Zoom ears, it would be hard for everyone to wear like a decent match between top and pants, you know, because maybe you might, you know, forgot to wear pants and you go out in your pyjama. It might happen, I think.
I think so. Well, I think I'm partly very excited to get properly dressed and to, you know, head out to restaurants. But I remember from last year, there is this very, it's quite a challenging transition from the lockdown life to the going back out life. And I think, I suppose you just hope that, you know, the capacity restrictions map on to people's, you know, willingness or ability to actually get themselves out there and to get back to restaurants, back onto public transport, you know, back into Ubers and taxis, whatever it is. But I think, yeah, it's challenging for, definitely challenging for hospitality staff, but also challenging for the people that are going to be coming into the restaurants.
That's very true. But yeah, and but I really hope that everyone will enjoy how good the little things are. That's the main thing. You know, again, it's like when you break your leg, when you start walking again, you realize how good it is to wake up in the middle of the night and you need to go to the toilet and you can go in 2 minutes or 2 seconds. While when you break it, you know, leg is broken, you need to kind of wake up a couple of minutes in advance. But, you know, and then you appreciate how good it is to be able to go to the toilet in 10 seconds. So I hope that people will appreciate the little things when we reopen.
I mean, your analogy of the broken leg seems very heartfelt. I have to ask you, have you ever broken your leg?
Yes.
Right. Yes. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So you speak from experience.
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally, definitely. Yeah. And the toilet thing is was the most challenging.
Okay. Well, you've got a very good analogy. I guess, you know, the big difference opening up this time, and we'll see how it plays out in Sydney over the next few weeks, but the big difference is the vaccination situation. How are you feeling about that from the point of view of, you know, managing a workforce, but also customers?
Yeah, that's the challenging thing. Regardless of the position, FYI, I'm fully vaccinated, so is my family and everyone. And all the staff as well is following the rules. So by the next week, everyone will have the first dose, at least booked. But all our employer, they already had the first jab done, which is great. Someone already too. The challenges will be from a sort of legal point of view. I always imagine this situation, okay? Hospitality, table of 10, 9 people are fully vaccinated and 1 is not. The question is, what do I do? You know, what do I do? Do I say to the 10th person, sorry, you can't sit in, but they already been mingling with the other 9? You know, like legally, do I have the authority to say, no, you can't come? That needs to be, I think, still clarifying. And I'm not, you know, of course, you know, complaining with anything and anyone, because sometimes we forget that when we use the word unprecedented, that now it becomes like, you know, in Italian we say something is like puzzle when it goes everywhere and loses its original meaning. But it really is. So it's not easy to be in any position at this moment. So I'm sure that in the coming weeks we will have a clearer situation, and everyone has to be a little bit patient, I think, in the first 2-3 weeks when everything will reopen, to see where we're heading, how, and how to make everyone happy.
I mean, I think you're right, and hopefully everybody will be patient, but hopefully everybody will also be vaccinated who's trying to come, and they won't make it difficult for hospitality staff, because I think the rules are pretty clear, really. It's like if they're not vaccinated, they're not allowed to be there. But of course, that may not help you have the conversation with that table of 10. But yeah, you just have to hope that when a group of 10 is deciding to go out together, that they will at least do some checking, like, hey, so everyone's vaccinated, right? Like this isn't going to go pear-shaped at any point. You really hope that there's a bit of teamwork in this situation, and customers don't put restaurants in difficult positions.
Yes, that's all. Well, you know, like my position is clear because I grew up with my nonno, and my nonno was like the tick boxes lover. So he always taught me, like, everywhere you go, you need to make sure that you can do what you're doing, because he was so scared of getting told off by the authority in that context. You know, it might be the teacher, it might be the cop, it might be the boss, whatever. So he taught me this kind of, you need to be ready and prepared approach. you know, I can't expect that all the other 5 billion people in this planet had my nonno, because it would be a very powerful nonno. But I really want to hope that everyone will try to walk in the other person's shoes for at least the first weeks, you know, and be patient. If you don't want to get vaccinated, I respect that. Maybe don't book a restaurant. And I'm sure that maybe in the coming, you know, in the next year, things are going to be, you know, a little bit smoother for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's not going to ever be as difficult as it is in the very first weeks.
Yeah, yeah. But and I'm also, I don't want to believe that in the next months, you know, the progress will go ahead. So we will have like hopefully a treatment or whatever it is that makes everyone's life easier and without the, you know, the painful step of being the controller. Because I, you know, it's not a very good situation for me either to say to someone, sorry, you can't come in.
Now, I just want to backtrack a little bit. Was the saying you were talking about with unprecedented, was that to do with parsley?
No, because yes. So in Italy,
can you explain
yeah,
that?
Yeah. So in Italy, essere come il prezzemolo, to be like parsley, it means both to be everywhere, because we use parsley. But also it means that because you're everywhere, you actually lose your value. So no one says, oh, you can really taste the parsley here because it's everywhere, you know? So it was the word unprecedented. It's, you know, some of the terminology that has been used in these pandemic years, very important words, unfortunately, in my opinion, lost their grip because of the overusage. So one is unprecedented, and people sometimes use it as you're saying, yeah, I have a coffee. But unprecedented means that there was nothing like that before.
Yeah, it's such a good expression. I love it. So let's go back to Italy, Andrea. Tell me about your early life with the place of food in it. And yeah, maybe some more about your beautiful nonno.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, nonno, my nonno was the best person on this planet, with all the respect to the other billion people on this planet. So I come from Tuscany, from the only Tuscan city which is famous for nothing, which is Livorno. I've done a lot of different things in my life, but in terms of hospitality, I've worked in a restaurant near the port, and we also open a little restaurant in a fish market in still in Livorno. We founded an association that cooperated with Slow Food, and we went to all the food festival around Italy, also the big important one, Italy. Sorry, the Salone del Gusto, it's called. It's every 2 years. And we went to like a fish soup festival all around Italy to make competition with other local fish soups and this and that. So I really had like a strong education in terms of local food and how good it is, you know, that a food is not just something that you put in your mouth, but it's a book that you're reading with your mouth, because it tells a lot about the culture and the personality of the people who live there, in my opinion. Yeah, and then I came here in where I come from, it's a seafood place basically, and So we eat a lot of, to be honest, I have to tell you a secret. I really don't like the fish soup from my hometown.
Really?
I don't like it. It's too strong to me. I don't. But yeah.
Like too much shellfish or what?
No, shellfish I love. But I don't like strong tomatoey sauces in fish too much. So I like clean and neat. Like a bouillabaisse for me is way better, but I can't say that because I couldn't say that at the time, because otherwise, you know.
Scandal.
Yeah, my reliability would go, you know, down the drain. And then I came here in 2013, getting a sponsor with the old 457 in a cafe in Hawthorne. Got my PR in 2016. Opening Figo and starting a PhD in 2017, which I finished the PhD 3 months ago.
Ah, tell me, that's congratulations. What's the PhD in?
It's in literary studies. I was researching on the guy who wrote Pinocchio, but not on Pinocchio specifically, on other texts.
Oh, so tell us more about that. Like, what were you studying?
I was trying to understanding how so this guy's name is Carlo Collodi, just to, you know, gives things a name. And he also wrote not only Pinocchio, but also a lot of books for primary school in the years where Italy was just reached the unification. So we're talking about end of 19th century. And because in this later, you know, everyone, most of people have seen the cartoon, the Disney cartoon of Pinocchio, but not read the book. And there's a big difference. So while it seems that Pinocchio is the personification of the middle class, you know, you work hard, you get awarded, and you can get a good, wealthy life. Actually, like the, you know, contemporary rereading of the book, they are actually questioning it and say like, it's not exactly like that. And these things hasn't invested yet the school books, and that's what I'm claiming. I'm claiming that also in his school books, which were approved by Italian government, he was actually delivering something that wasn't totally supporting the middle class.
So, I mean, I grew up going to Italian restaurants every second Friday night with my family, and one of the restaurants we went to was called Pinocchio, and it was on Turek Road in South Yarra. The other one was next door, and it was called Tamani. Normally we went to Tamani, but sometimes we went to Pinocchio, and they had murals along the wall of the story of Pinocchio. So that's where I really learned it. It really soaked into my bones. And to me, the story was always a morality tale about lying. It was always that if you told a lie, it would be visible externally and you would be caught. But this doesn't sound like the main point of the story to you.
No, but the book is not like, it doesn't lie that often in the book. Yeah, the nose grows when he lies, but, you know, there's not much attention from the author on the lying thing.
Really?
It happens, but, you know, also because you need to understand that that book wasn't originally a book, was an episode. It's like a TV series now, you know. It was an episode on a magazine. And sometimes the writer was so lazy that, you know, months pass between an episode and the other. And it was actually conceived, the original version ended with Pinocchio dying by hang.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, which is pretty, you know, intense for a children magazine. But then after that, the children readers started writing to the magazine, oh, we want Pinocchio. And the guy started from, you know, end of season one, and the beginning of season two is like Jon Snow in the Game of Thrones, you know. The beginning of season two, boop, he opens his eyes and he's still alive.
Right.
Wow. So.
Oh, that's so interesting. I've actually been, the story crossed my mind recently when we're talking about all the anti-corruption commissions, and I was thinking, wouldn't it be great to have an anti-corruption commission for politicians where it was as simple as you could just see someone's nose grow if they lied?
Oh, that would be great. Look, like even if you didn't put much attention on that, I think that invention was brilliant, because imagine how beautiful the world would be with the only thing is that really you needed to put like glasses very far away from the table, because, you know, otherwise I think there wouldn't be any person on this planet with a short nose.
Yeah, that's right. Even you, when you pretend to remember Caroline's pizza.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, two of them, they like anchovies. So I always play the anchovy card.
Okay, right. Yeah, love it. So Andrea, that's so interesting that you not only run a restaurant, but you're also, you know, a literary scholar. How do you sort of balance those two aspects of your life, or do they easily go together for you?
Well, first of all, I'm super lucky to have not only two fantastic business partners, Valerio and Sally, and they own also La Svolta in Hampton and Ganzo in Richmond. And they make my life easier because, you know, they're always there supporting me. And also the staff, everyone working there, like from the, you know, from the dish helper to the floor manager, they're all the same to me. And they make my life easier because in that way I can be there always 24/7 for resolving problems, but physically I can limit to the weekend or to the, you know, when someone is sick or is missing. Also because 1.5 years ago I had my first son. So life is it's a bit busy at the moment.
Mm, yeah. So in a way, did it work out okay for you that you could get your PhD finished while Melbourne's been in and out of lockdown?
Yes. I have to say yes also because, you know, like there wasn't the extreme need to be there every night because of the lockdown. So like the restaurant didn't need too much, not attention, but staff. So in a paradoxical way, the lockdown didn't make it harder, let's put it this way.
Yeah, right. So you said you've done a lot of different things in your life, and now we've discovered your studies, your PhD. Is there anything else we need to know about?
I worked in the video production and cinema when I was in Italy before working in the restaurant. As a video editor, as a video maker for local theaters, for theater shows to create video backgrounds, and in cinema to, you know, editor assistant. But then my life was very unhealthy because I was sitting in front of the computer editing videos until like 5 in the morning. And then I decided that probably I needed a change. And apart from some journalism, some radio experiences as well, I think I said it all. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Great. So as we reopen and, you know, things get hopefully a bit more back to normal, what do you think are going to be the big issues? And I suppose, you know, just to prompt you, one thing I'm thinking about is international staff. And you mentioned how important it is to have people who understand a bit about pizza and Italian food. I mean, how important is it to Figo that you are able to have staff coming from Italy?
Well, it's important from many perspectives. Because the first of all, it's the skill of not only knowing how to make, you know, a dough or make a pizza, which, you know, it's very important, but it can be built on anyone coming from any country of this world. It's more the cultural background that sometimes is required, because what I want and what we want when people come into Figo is that for an hour and a half, they don't just eat Italian food, but they are in Italy for a while. So even the staff that we have at the moment on the floor who are not Italian, they started to behave like Italians at the moment. You know, because that's the whole experience. You know, I think everyone has kind of silent expectation when you go to a certain restaurant. I don't know, if I'm going to a Russian restaurant, I'm not expecting waiters to come and hug me and talk in Spanish. You know what I mean? Even if it's not crucial, because I'm not going for that, but it's kind of a silent expectation, as I said. So, yeah, I think that the problem is cultural, and also, how can I say, it's the secondary meaning of not having staff is that the world is closed to us. And that's the, you know, people now, also the staff who are here, they start to suffer a little bit because it's almost 2 years that they haven't seen their families. And, you know, this situation needs to somehow come to an end.
Yeah. Well, it's so difficult, isn't it? I mean, you've got permanent residency, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So for you and for me, like, we can go overseas to visit family, or, you know, soon we'll be able to. But as far as we know, so far, in terms of the announcements from the federal government, people who are on visas don't have that same, well, they won't soon have that ability to travel overseas and come back without, you know, the hotel quarantine. It's really the visa holders at the moment, the ones that stayed, now they're sort of trapped.
Ah, I completely agree with that. And I find it unfair, as I found unfair when last year they didn't have any access to any kind of financial support other than rent reduction. And luckily this year they could have access to the disaster payment. You know, like the human beings before, and I understand, of course, all the concerns and the fact that, you know, because Australia is an island, there's, you know, it's a little less difficult to adopt certain restrictions with the rest of the world. You know, in Italy, it's not easy to close Italy because there's bazillions countries just next. But I don't know, maybe they start to consider people as people and the vaccination as a requirement, regardless of the visa. I don't think the vaccine it works better or worse if you have a permanent residency or another. I don't think medical studies haven't outlined that according to the visa status.
I don't think so either. I mean, it's ridiculous. If you're able to quarantine at home and if you're vaccinated, it shouldn't make any difference what passport you've got.
Oh, I completely agree. Look, of course, if you live in a building with 45,000 apartments or you share your house with 15 people, maybe you should organize and get organized with quarantine facilities and this and that. But if someone is happy to pay for that, and they actually need, we had many experience of staff who needed to go because of something happened in Italy. In 2 years' time, when you're here and you're in your 30s, you might have your parents who are in the 70s, or you might have nonni in the 90s. You know, something can happen. And you need to be able, with all the possible safety measurements, to come and go. You need to, especially now that vaccines are available.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I take your point that if you live in a large household or if you live in an apartment building where it might be easier for transmission to occur, yeah, perhaps you should consider staying elsewhere while you're quarantining. But that could just as easily be an Australian as anybody else who's in that position.
Exactly.
I really hope that changes quickly, because I know by definition, people who are here from overseas have got loved ones that they very well may want to see in another country. So it just, to me, it doesn't make sense that they're being held here.
Oh, look, I think it's more urgent, a problem like that, rather than, railing for freedom of choice, vaccine or no vaccine. I think that some issues are even more important, and sometimes we don't consider enough what other people might go through. And I think the issue of someone who cannot see their loved ones for 2 years is becoming, more unbearable than should I get the vaccine or not, but I'm scared, and all the other reason that I don't want to delve in, because it's another discussion. But sometimes we need to step back and think, okay, what are other people feeling now? Like, what other situation worse than mine are out there?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Andrea, so hopefully you'll be open in a couple of weeks and I can come down for some food. What will you feed me?
Your name is not Caroline, so I cannot feed you anything with anchovies. look, a figo, like the dish that I love the most, of course, it's the meatball, because that's my nonna's recipe. And I'm not saying because it sounds like, that's so stereotypical. It really is. Like, it really is the way that my nonna was used to make meatballs. She's always been very careful about money spending. So in order to have less meat but to feed more people, she always mixed in equal parts meat and ricotta cheese. And so the meatballs were coming very, very fluffy, and she always refused to put the, Italians, they put the bread, the soaked bread in the meatballs, which makes it very carby. While in that way they become like nice and fluffy, and it's not just for me a dish. It's a picture of my nonna, basically. So I will feed you meatball for sure, and then you need to choose either pasta or pizza.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. It sounds so good, and maybe a spritz as well to start.
Of course. Yeah. That's for granted.
Andrea, it's been fantastic to talk to you. Really interesting to hear all the different things that have brought you to this point in your life. Good luck with the next couple of weeks of, getting pizzas out the door, but planning to reopen and welcome customers into the door. It's, really, I feel like we're getting there. And before we know it, Melbourne will be back to life.
Yes, that will be great. Hopefully we appreciate the small things. And thank you, Dani, for all the things that you've done, especially in those couple of years for every one of us visa holders. That's like incredibly outstanding. And I'm not trying to be, how do you say in English when you try to get people goodwill? I'm being very honest in saying that. We're really, really thankful.
Well, I mean, what is Melbourne without everyone from, you know, all around the place. So yeah, for me, it's it's obvious. Like, we just need to look after everybody and be a very welcoming city. I feel like that's what we are all about. All right, I'll see you for a spritz before too long, Andrea. Thank you.
Perfetto. Ciao, Dani.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Dani Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.